On December 6th, 2014, Sitka Community Theater presented an evening of live radio theater on stage before an audience at the Sitka Performing Arts Center. The show was recorded for this broadcast on Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Wild Jack Rhett from the series Escape aired December 17, 1950.
Red Mesa, a little town springing out of the hot, dry prairie beside the Chisholm Trail. A saloon, a hotel, two general stores, and a tiny church where the decent citizenry might pray for salvation, while a wilder element, trail driver and teamster and buffalo hunter, restlessly search out friend and enemy along the dusty main street. A small hill rose on the western edge of Red Mesa, plagued with a rash of graves, some marked and cared for, some sinking and forgotten.
Man who is full of woe, man has but a short time to live and is full of misery. He cometh up and is cut down like a flower. He flieth as it were a shadow. While we're praying, a couple of you boys start throwing dirt on the sheriff. Oh, Lord, with whom do live the spirits of them that be dead, and in whom the souls be?
And that same evening, a committee of the leading citizens of Red Mesa gathered together at Mayor Wayne's home to decide upon a new sheriff.
All right, gentlemen, sit down. Let's get this settled. Gentlemen, to make this town a decent place for our women folk and children, we've got to have a sheriff that Todd Mallon and his kind can't kill. We need the toughest gunfighter available, and I want to propose...
Now, just a minute, Mayor Wayne. Let me speak.
All right. Go ahead, Boylan.
I don't think we should get all upset just because we lost another sheriff. Jim Speed worked out just fine for Red Mesa. All we need is another sheriff just about like him.
I expected that, Boylan. All you look out for is to keep that saloon of yours full of anybody who'll buy a whiskey and gamble. I still propose we reform this town by sending for a man, some you may have heard of, Jack Rhett.
Did you hear that?
All right, gentlemen, I do want my saloon full. In front of the only men who'll bring any money at all into Red Mesa. Cowpunchers coming up the Chisholm Trail with Texas cattle. Thirsty men on the prod from a long drive. Why, you give them Jack Rhett instead of a little fun, and this town will go broke.
We'll chance that, Boylan. We'll chance that.
What about that Travner? What's he got to say?
I got nothing to say, gentlemen. As U.S. Deputy Marshal for the district, my job is strictly outside Red Mesa. You run this town any way you like. I'll handle the surrounding territory.
Know anything about Jack Rhett, Travner?
Just by reputation. Professional town tamer. I've heard he's the most cold-blooded killer who ever drew a gun.
Travner's right. We can't afford a man like that here.
Let's put it to a vote. Gentlemen, all in favor of sending for Jack Rhett, raise their right hand. Five to one. Matter settled. Gentlemen, good night.
Good night.
Still waiting to see Mary, Travner?
If you don't mind, Mayor.
Of course. Sit down. She'll be out in a minute. Well, Boylan was pretty bad. After Jack Rhett's here for a while, there'll be less gunfighting.
There'd be less anyway if Todd Mallon were out of the way. Sets a bad example. He's a hard man to catch.
Well, you've done all you can, Travner. There's just too much territory around here for Mallon and his gang to lose themselves in. He'd have to be taken by a town officer, I think, and Rhett's the man to do it, if Mallon comes to town again.
He'll come, Mayor. When word gets out that Rhett is sheriff here, Mallon will have to face him. He'll lose his reputation with his own men.
Good evening, Father. Hello, Matt.
Good evening.
Hello, darling.
Well, Matt Travner, aren't you going to kiss me?
Well, of course, sure. Here.
Mary, what a shameless wench you are.
Oh, Father, you're so old-fashioned. After all, we're engaged.
Your mother, God rest her soul, didn't behave like that when we were engaged.
The war changed things, Father.
I know. Not for the better. Well, I'm off to bed. Don't stay up too late now. Good night.
Good night, Father.
Good night, sir.
You look worried, Matt.
Do I?
Yeah, tell me about it.
It's just that they're sending for a new sheriff. Legal killer named Red. He has quite a reputation, and there will always be men to challenge him.
Oh, that means more gunfighting. Is that it?
I'm afraid so. It's a bloody way to peace, Mary.
I know. Well, let's not worry about it now, huh? Come on, I'll fix some coffee for us.
3 weeks later, Wild Jack Rhett rode into Red Mesa. He was 38 and at the peak of his reputation. He stood well over 6 feet, better than 200 pounds of plain sinew. Tawny blonde hair grew long in the frontier style, and his features, fair and tinted like a girl's, were boldly accurate. He was a picturesque man, till one looked at his eyes, which were large and pale blue and had the disconcerting trick of remaining too steadily on people. There was to be seen in them the suggestion of inhumanity. He sent word to the committee that he'd meet them at the mayor's office that evening.
It's 8 o'clock now. Where is he?
He's in town. That's bad enough.
Well, be a sport, Bo Helen. We took a fair vote on Rhett.
Well, here he comes now.
My name is Jack Rhett. I have your offer.
I'm Peter Wayne, mayor of Red Mesa. Do you accept it?
Depends on what you want. Tell me.
Rhett, this is a difficult town. Chisholm Trail lies just across the river. We get most of our money from the riders passing through with Texas cattle. Now, we want them to have a decent time with their money, but we don't like a lot of gunplay and killing.
I've always been accustomed to complete authority, Mayor. I presume to know my job, and I won't have interference.
That's agreed, Rhett. By the way, the last sheriff had a rule that riders leave their hardware at his office. He had trouble enforcing it.
Poor rule. Let them pack their guns.
That gives the Wild Ones a fair chance at you.
I never give a man a fair chance at me. That all, gentlemen?
Boyle and Saloon was the usual deadfall, with a huge bar along one side of the room and gaming tables toward the rear. The next morning, Boellen stood tapping the mahogany of the bar with her fingertips, staring thoughtfully at nothing.
Top of the morning, Boellen.
It's noon, Seamus.
Oh, sure. Show me a beer, Mike. Where's the new sheriff, Boellen?
Over there at the corner table. He came in just before you did.
Barkeeper, bring me a cigar and a glass of rye.
Now he's going to clean and reload his 6 guns, one at a time.
By golly, he is. How'd you know?
It's an old gunman's trick, to impress the citizens.
But there's no one here, except you and me.
Well, then it's to impress me.
Goodbye, Boylan. Mike.
You got something to say to me, Boellen?
Yes. Yes, I have. You're smart, Rhett. I recognize that. But your record for business is too severe. And my business depends on an open town. All that reform element gat, you know I'll go along with it for now. But just remember one thing. I can break you, Rhett, anytime.
I was waiting for that, Boellen.
Well, then I guess we understand each other.
Hello?
Oh, any luck, Matt?
Just a morning's ride.
Matt, here's Jack Rhett. Rhett, this is Matt Travner, the U.S. Deputy Marshal for the district.
Glad to know you, Rhett. You're young.
Don't be misled.
Rhett, your job is in town. Mine's everything outside. So I'll either back you up here in Red Mesa or leave you strictly alone.
I'll handle Red Mesa.
All right. One more thing. I want Todd Mallon. He comes to town again, he'll have to be taken. Will you do that or should I?
What is he?
Outlaw. His main line is plain robbery. Now I want him for killing Jim Speed.
Let me handle Mallon.
Why?
Killing's my trade. Man doesn't live with enough animal instinct to get me.
Maybe. Killing you would build a man's reputation considerable.
Just so.
Well, good luck, Rhett.
There was peace for a full week in Red Mesa, and then on Saturday night, Matt Trappin's prediction came true. Jack Rhett was at his customary post just opposite the Welland Saloon in a chair on the porch of the Chinook Hotel. Obscured by shadows and watching the crowd, his cold, pale eyes half concealed by cigar smoke. Trouble found him thus.
Evening, Sheriff.
Evening, ma'am.
Keeping an eye on the boys, eh? Whoa, shooting!
Where's that great man, Wild Jack Rhett? Bring him out!
Hello, cowboy.
Well, that's a lot of killing for one sheriff. I don't like it.
Forget it, friend. Just have a drink and forget it.
You're Bo Ellen, ain't you?
That's right. Come on, I'll have one on the house. Hey, Mike, fix him up.
I can pay for my liquor. I never gave him a chance. What kind of sheriff you got here? Shoots one man, then jumps out of the shadows 50 feet from his gun flash and shoots down two more? Those boys never had a chance at him.
Just drink your drink, cowboy.
That was the most merciless killing I've ever seen. He's a butcher. I wish I had a gun to...
Shut up!
This is my game. They were fools to play it. Never buck a man who spent his life learning to kill, son. Get out of town. Get out now.
Rhett, what if I...
Don't try it, son. Don't let your anger destroy you. Go on. Drift.
I'll blast your town. I could hold my thirst another 200 miles up the trail. Come on, boys. We'll send word back to Texas to go around Red Mesa. Let it dry up to powder.
Yeah, that's right. Let's go.
It won't do, Rhett.
It'll do, Bo Ellen. Barkeep, bring me a glass of rye on the house.
Rhett stood with his back to the bar, holding his drink and thin black cigar carefully in one hand. He stood there for about 10 minutes. And then, trouble came again.
It's Todd Mallon! He's riding in with four men!
Close the gates! Open up the back doors!
Well, Jack Rhett, now let's see you shoot down Todd Mallon and four men from the shadows.
Good night, Bo Ellen.
When word came to Bo Ellen's saloon that Todd Mallon was riding into Red Mesa with four men, why, Jack Rhett simply walked out, crossed the street to his office, sat down and waited. 20 minutes later, Todd Mallon had arrived and departed. Not a shot fired. Then Jack Rhett went quietly to bed. But early Sunday morning, he was back in his office.
Come in.
Morning, Rhett.
Well, Trapper.
There's talk, Rhett.
I expected that.
Now, Rhett, you told me you'd handle Mallon if he came to town.
Yes, Travner.
Well, they say Mallon came to town last night with four men. Rode right up to this office, got down, and came inside. But you and he stood there with his desk between you two, talking. Then a few minutes later, Mallon left and rode out of town.
I play the game my own way, Travner. And I don't want interference from anybody.
People are saying maybe you and Mallon made a deal of some kind.
Look out! Well, now, somebody's breaking the Sabbath. Know who it could be, Travner?
No, I don't.
That's a rifle. Sounds like one of those seven-shot Spencers.
Well, that's Old Hack Crow.
Who's he?
Old Trapper. Comes to town every few months, sells his furs, gets drunk, goes a little crazy. Jim Speed always laid him away in jail to sober.
Well, I'll take a look.
You better stop him, Rhett.
He's only got 2 shots left. That'll satisfy him. I doubt if he'll reload.
And if he notices us and decides to shoot?
Then I'll have to kill him. Hey, Who's that coming out of Bo Ellis?
Ewald Bay, gambler. He's a fool. Now, Hack's getting his horse. You gonna stop him, Rhett?
Nope. Let him go.
Oh! Rhett, the town is your territory, and I won't interfere. But why'd you refuse a fair shot at Hack Crow? Ewald Bay is dead.
Which is a more useful citizen, Travner? Crow or Bay? The West is full of gamblers.
There was considerable talk that day in Red Mesa over Jack Rhett's aloof and cruel, calm and condoning to the shooting that had occurred under his very eyes, and within reach of his formidable guns. Then, mid-afternoon, a rider came up from the prairie and reported finding Old Hack Crow dead in a gully, dry gulched and robbed. Mayor Wayne had heard about it and went to Bo Ellen's saloon to hear more.
Well, good evening, Mayor.
Well, Boellen, how about a brandy?
And what do you think of your great Jack Rat now, Mayor?
Looks bad.
Now look, Mayor, everyone knew Hackrow carried his profits in his pocket. He always did that. So Rhett allowed him to leave, and Hod Malin and his men were waiting for him in the gully. It's as simple as that.
You have no proof of that, Boellen.
No? Then why didn't Rhett take Malin when he rode in here last night? Because they made a business arrangement, that's why.
Well, it doesn't look good, but...
Shh, there's Rhett now.
Barkeep, a glass of rye.
I don't want to talk to him yet. I'm leaving. Good night, Boellen.
Good night, Mayor. Mike, give me that rye. I'll take it to the sheriff myself. Here's your drink, Sheriff. Mind if I sit down?
The game never changes, Boellen. I know what you're gonna say.
I warned you I could break you, Rhett.
No story to me. Every town's got one insider who plays along with the oddballs. I knew you to be that one here when I first saw you. Running a saloon, you'd know when a cattle buyer was riding out of town carrying a specie, when the overland stage is loaded with gold. There was a quarrel over the split of profits between you and Malin. You fell apart. That's always the way.
Very shrewd, Rhett.
It's an old story, Boellen, and I know it by heart.
Very shrewd, but you can't play the same game.
All sheriffs are supposed to be crooked.
You and Malin had an agreeable little chat last night. Did he make you a good offer, Rhett?
Maybe I should accept his offer, Boellen, just to keep you two split. Maybe I should do that.
Rhett, I've seen sheriffs come and go. It's a chancy trade.
Sheriffs die. They all die. It's the only question of time.
You're a hard one, Jack Rhett.
You might make your peace with Malin. You have to be that way, otherwise you'll have little chance of getting rid of me, Boellen.
It may be that way.
I wouldn't be surprised. I always expect the worst in people, and I'm seldom disappointed.
It was turning dark as Jack Rhett left Boellen's saloon. Crossing the street, he walked into his office, but continued out through the back door. A few minutes later, he stood in the gathering shadows opposite the stables and watched Boellen ride out and drift into the prairie to the south. He knew now what to expect. It would happen soon, perhaps tomorrow. He returned to his office and slept the night there.
Come in. Well.
Morning, Rhett. I want you to meet Mary Wayne.
Miss Wayne, I'm very proud.
Hi. I wanted to know you.
To meet him, Mary, not to know him. Rhett lives in a closed world.
See that? I have no friends.
Oh, well, we're to be married on Thursday, Mr. Rhett. I should like you to be there.
I'd be most happy. Thank you.
Now, Mary, would you wait outside? Got some business to discuss with the sheriff.
Oh, of course, Matt, but... don't be long. Goodbye, Mr. Rhett.
Miss?
Rhett, this afternoon I'm leaving to find Todd Malin. You had your chance, but you let him go.
Wait, Travner, wait.
I had tried patience, Rhett, and I'm a poor hand at it.
Travner, you have a fine girl. If it's not presuming, let me congratulate you and compliment her.
Thank you. Is that all?
I'll take care of Malin. Give me a little time. It's my job.
Rhett, I want to believe you, but...
No man wearing a star should believe anybody. It's a weakness, haven't I told you?
Don't think I quite understand you, Rhett.
Then understand this. Every man has his time. When it comes, he knows it. There's no turning back. Nothing makes any difference then, except to stand up to the finish and go out in decent style.
And yet you're the man who never believes in giving another man a break.
Don't try to understand me.
You want help with Malin?
I have no faith in help.
Matt!
Coming, Mary.
Wait, Trapper. I'll suggest this much. Take one man. Ride due north to where the cattle trail crosses Tempest Creek. Be there tonight. Understand?
I hate to oppose you.
If you did, you'd lose. I've been 15 years at this, Trapper, which is 5 years beyond average luck.
That evening, Jack Rhett took up his post on the porch at the Chinook Hotel. Dressed in his best, a hard white shirt, blood-red Windsor tie, and a suit of black broadcloth swelling around the big, uncompromising shoulders. He stood there, calm behind the smoke of his cigar, waiting.
Full moon tonight, Sheriff.
That's right.
No offense, mind you.
Good evening, Rhett.
Hello, Mayor Wayne. Mayor, have you seen Trevor?
He rode north this afternoon. Be back tomorrow, he said.
Good.
Where's the sheriff?
Here I am.
Brett, listen. I just came up South Creek and Todd Mallon and six men were only a quarter mile behind me heading into town.
All right, friend. Take cover.
Brett stood up and moved into the shadow at the end of the hotel porch. Across the street, Ballin appeared in the full glow of the doorway of her saloon.
Come out of the dark and meet your price, Jack Rhett. What are you afraid of? It's only Mallon riding in to see you.
Thieves fall out, but the urge for profits brings them together again.
You should have known it, Rhett.
Nothing surprises me.
Well, oh, there you are, Rhett. Surprised to find you exposing your great reputation out there in the street.
Every man has his time. You want to try it, Bo Ellen? Or will you wait for help?
I'll wait.
The arriving horses came up into the moonlit street and halted at the corner of the saloon. Bowen's hand lifted toward the group, and at the order, the horsemen spread out until they were flank to flank all across the street. Todd Mallon advanced from the line and stopped, square and alert above the saddle. Jack Rhett stood alone in the middle of the street, his eyes flashing a hard jury, and he dropped a cigar and ground it beneath the boot. It was a final gesture.
How are you, Mallon? Goodbye, gentlemen.
Next day, Red Mason buried some more men out on the hill and talked of Jack Rhett, who was more of a mystery to them now than when living. To all of them but one, Matt Travner.
Nobody knows a killer's world, Mary. There wasn't any room in Jack Rhett for much pity, but he sent me away to save me from what he knew was coming. I think that was a kindness, although I had no fear.
It was a fine thing for him to do, Matt. But they say he stood in the middle of the street and faced them all in the moonlight. Why? It wasn't his style.
As long as he was sure of himself, he never gave anybody an even chance, Mary. But killers live and die by instinct. Somewheres along the evening, he got the warning. After that, it was just a matter of pride. He killed Mallon and Bo Ellen before he died, standing up in a good style. And that's sort of a greatness, isn't it?
Jack Rhett from the series Escape, starring Emeterio Hernandez as the narrator and Man 3, Iris Snelling as Preacher and Man 2, Aaron Fulton as Bo Ellen, John Stein as the Mayor, Emily Kwong as Mary, Seton Bryan as Travner, Adam Litton as Jack Rhett, Mary Barrett as Man 1 and Woman, Angelo Canizero as Seamus and Man 4, music by Celia Lubin and directed by Megan Pasternak. In the Trees by John Longenbaugh.
High in the tree canopy of the South American rainforest, 60 feet above the forest floor, three sloths hang on a long tree limb.
Oh my God, help! Oh my God, please help me, someone, I'm slipping!
Oliver?
Oh my God!
What's going on?
Oliver's yelling.
I'm slipping!
He's...
something.
Hang on, Oliver.
Oh, I'm slipping.
We're coming, sweetheart.
Oh, I'm slipping.
Just hold on.
Oh, I'm slipping.
It's okay.
Oh, I'm still slipping.
Just don't look down.
My toes are letting go.
Almost there, sweetheart.
Oh,
just.
Why, God, why me?
Don't look down.
Why just three toes? Do you hate sloths?
Almost there, buddy.
Oh, God. Cynthia, tell the children that. Cynthia?
I think. She's asleep, Oliver.
Really? Well, that's just... Well, that...
In the Trees by John Longenbaugh, starring Phil Horton as Oliver, Tracy Turner as Cynthia, and Jay Sweeney as Albert. Directed by Susan Brotman.
Lazy, I just want to be lazy.
Call myself a social butterfly, and there's not much that separates me from the other guy. But when I...
Face Cookie by John Longenbaugh. Two men, two women, all at their computers. It's Sunday afternoon on Facebook.
Hey, guys and gals. Just ate a delicious cookie. Smiley face.
Ooh, what kind?
Chocolate chip.
Gluten-free?
No.
Yum. Can I just say, I find the term gal offensive.
Oh, sorry.
Organic free trade chocolate?
I don't know.
Slave chocolate?
Wait, what?
I don't mind being called a gal. Smiley face.
Do you know how much blood goes into your chocolate?
None, I hope.
Thanks for betraying your own gender, sister.
What?
Laugh all you want, but people are dying.
From chocolate?
He was just saying what sort of cookie he likes.
I don't need to be mansplained about cookies. If I don't eat gluten, that is my choice. It's gals like you that make things harder for all of us. How?
I'm not gonna waste my time on bombastic Republican fascists like you!
For once in your life, think about reading a book, Barbie.
Unfriend.
I like cookies. Smiley face.
There's an online world where I am king.
Face Cookie by John Longenbaugh, starring Luciano Canizzaro as Ned, Rachel Waldholz as Susan, Addie Fowler as Mary, and Phil Horton as Stan, and directed by Megan Pasternak.
Who would have thought that with a point and a click, I would know that Hope Floats is your favorite flick?
Harry Connick Jr.
New World Under by John Longenbaugh, a retelling of the Persephone myth, which explains the changing of the seasons from spring to fall and winter.
A sunny summer day.
I had watched her from afar, followed her, and approached with an invitation.
An invitation?
Hello there.
I didn't hear you.
You are exquisite.
Didn't hear a thing.
I was calling up a well.
How would I have heard that?
I couldn't get any closer. Allergies.
What are you allergic to again?
Pollen, chlorophyll, sunlight.
So, instead of a meeting, an abduction. I was in a meadow, and there was a flower.
Narcissus.
So pretty, so yellow.
I was waving it slightly from below.
And I reached down to it, and a hand reached up through it. And I was down, 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 and the earth was in my mouth, and in my head. And I was the earth, and it was me, and I was held. I was held in his arms, strong white arms holding me in the dark. Then my eyes were lit by the blue light of the dead, and I was alive in the house of the dead.
You are the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. I love you.
And I thought, it could be worse.
My name, lovely maiden, is Pluto.
Pluto?
Yes.
I've heard of you.
Nothing bad, I hope.
All bad. You're death, aren't you?
Now, see, that's a misperception.
It is?
I am not death. I am not dead either. Look at me. I'm in good health. Well, physically, at least.
Physically?
It's hard not to be morbid, living here, like this, in the dark, below.
I'm Proserpina.
That is the most beautiful name I have ever heard. What are your favorite colors?
Yellow and red.
Back in a moment.
No one ever asked me that before.
Beauties for my beauty.
Oh, so pretty! Rubies and bloodstones, topaz and yellow sapphires. Thank you.
And for food, yellow honey cakes and red pomegranates.
I'm watching my figure.
Take a pomegranate?
For later.
She was happy. I was happy. But up above, things got bad.
My daughter is dead! Relax, Mom. I'm not dead.
She's dead!
Try yelling up through a well.
Mom! Hello! I'm not dead!
Gods! She's been buried alive!
That's nearer the truth.
My daughter has been stolen! She's been stolen from the world and taken down to the cold, dead stones below. I will save her.
She will, too.
She won't. She can wail and scream and stomp around up there.
I will wail and scream and stomp!
But she can't come down here without a visa. Now, let me show you my kingdom.
This is a kingdom?
It is, and I am the king. And you shall be queen.
Queen?
If you want to, if that sounds good to you.
Queen.
I mean, it really doesn't have a job description. The title itself is more honorific.
Queen of this place?
I know. Isn't it beautiful?
Well, it could be. What's that?
Earthquake. Don't worry. We get them sometimes.
If I know my mother, you'll be getting more.
I told you. No visa.
Knock, knock!
I'll get it.
Abductor!
How did you get here?
I wailed and screamed and stomped hard, and the earth turned gray and cold, and they filled out a visa right quick, I can tell you.
Who is it?
It's your mother.
Mom?
My baby! Has he hurt you? I will kill you!
Good luck.
Die!
Lady, I not only wrote the book on death, I own the only copy.
Give me my daughter!
Ma'am, I love your daughter very much, and I would like to ask you for...
Die!
Ow! That hurt. Proserpina, please talk to your mother.
Mom.
Die! Oh, not you, sweetheart. Live. Let's get away from this awful man.
He's not that bad.
Of course he is. Cold, pale, skinny, dead man.
He's got a loving nature.
He does not. The dead don't love.
I love you, Proserpina.
Shut up. Just lie there, cold and stiff, and the worms come and eat them. Is this what you want? A skeleton wearing his second best skin?
Mom, we need to talk.
We need to flee! Hurry! Whoa! Is that mold on the wall?
Phosphorescence. Beautiful, yes?
Die!
Ow! I'll give you two some alone time. Just gonna check on the newly dead sweetheart. Back in a few minutes.
He's not so bad, Mom.
What hold does he have over you, baby?
He loves me. A lot. He brings me a big basket of gems every morning in my favorite colors. And he respects my dietary restrictions.
Do you love him?
I love that he leaves me alone most of the time.
That's not love. Leaving you alone is not love. You are my dearest, darling baby girl, and I love you so much that when I thought you were dead, I went crazy.
I know. A lot of very thin people showed up down here because of you.
Serves them right, letting you get carried away. My daughter. The daughter of a goddess.
And I love being your daughter. With my own desk in your temple, I get to talk to a lot of people.
Powerful people.
Powerful people.
Priests and kings.
And farmers.
Powerful farmers.
Okay, powerful. But there's something to being here, too. Up there, I work for you. And on the weekends, I'm a serving girl to Uncle Jove. Which is okay, I guess. Though he's got grabby hands, and his beard smells like nectar. But, Mom, you know what I am down here?
The lover of a skinny dead man?
No. Here, I am the powerful one. You know your throne, the big one in the central temple?
Of course.
Mine's bigger and grander and older.
You're deluded. You've gone crazy from the darkness down here.
No, my eyes have gotten accustomed to the darkness. And I have responsibilities.
To who?
The dead. They're all so confused, frightened, weeping and wandering, like children, scared of themselves and each other. Up there, with you, I do your work. Down here, I do mine.
Poor child. Poor stolen child. Down among the dead so long that you have forgotten life.
I dream of it sometimes. The sun and the moon.
They're waiting! Back up those stairs! The sun and the moon and the cucumbers and the pears and the sheaves of wheat and the soft winds and the hymns of appreciation.
I miss all of that.
Leave this dreaming darkness for the day. Return with your mother.
But could I come back here sometimes?
If you do, I will walk in the world with my sorrow and pain, and I will make it as bad up there as it is down here. Now let's go.
Oh, what a mess. Etna's erupted again, and there's a whole village that's suddenly shown up. Proserpina?
Die!
Would you please stop that?
I have to go.
You're leaving?
Yes.
But I adore you.
I will miss you.
Then come visit.
I can't.
You can. There, the pomegranate. When you want to see me, tear it open. Pull out the seeds, take a bite, a small bite. You will return.
I don't know.
Proserpina, we're going. Now.
She wants you always. I want you when you want me.
Get away from her, corpse!
Nice meeting you, ma'am.
Drop deader! Out this way! Hurry up, Proserpina! We do not age and we do not die, and you will never come back to this awful dark place.
Farewell.
Farewell, my love.
I will think of you in autumn. And the taste of pomegranates.
And I will think of you always, and the yellow of the narcissus.
If you change your mind on the tasting night, honey, I'm still free. Take a chance on me.
New World Under by John Longenbaum, starring Jessica Maneri as Proserpina, Zach Desmond as Pluto, and Stephanie Ass as Ceres. Directed by Susan Braun. Sherlock Holmes, The Night Before Christmas, from the Sherlock Holmes series on the Mutual Broadcasting Company, aired December 24, 1945. Thank you.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce and the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invites you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. Well, right about now, you're probably taking a little breather in your last-minute rush to get everything ready for the big day tomorrow. Children have to be put to bed to wait for Santa Claus, and there's a tree waiting to be decorated and, oh, a million and one things which must be done before morning. I sure hope you got all your Christmas shopping done. It's pretty hectic rushing off at the last minute to take care of Uncle Charlie or Aunt Bertha or Cousin Sam. But if you must get something, just remember that you can always dash over to your wine merchant and get a bottle or two of Petri wine. Or better yet, a whole case of Petri wine. Petri wine's a swell gift, and I just thought a little last-minute suggestion might be of some help. And now I'm sure our good friend Dr. Watson's waiting for us, so let's go in and join him.
Come in, come in, come in. Ah, there you are, Mr. Bartell.
Oh, say, Doctor, I can see you're going to have yourself quite a Christmas. Big tree in the corner with colored lights on it? Where'd you get those? Table covered with presents? You must be mighty popular.
They aren't all for me, my boy. You see, I'm having a Christmas party tomorrow for my housekeeper's little nieces.
Oh.
I'm going to dress up as Santa Claus for them.
Well, I'm sure you'll look very convincing in the part. Oh, by the way, Doctor, I thought you might like a little present.
Oh, really?
Here it is. I hope you like it.
It's good of you, Mr. Bartell. I've got one for you, too, here somewhere. Oh, you mustn't open it until tomorrow. Here you are, my boy.
Ah, oh, thanks a lot, Doctor. And how about tonight's story? Last week, you told us you'd chosen an adventure with a lot of Christmassy atmosphere.
Yes, Mr. Bartell. My story begins on another Christmas Eve many, many years ago. To be exact, in 1886. At the time the adventure occurred, I must confess I didn't quite understand what was going on myself. In fact, I never did quite make heads or tails of it until Holmes took pity on me later and explained the whole thing. But I shan't try to confuse you, Mr. Bartell. I'll tell you the story exactly as it happened.
Right you are, Doctor. Let's go.
Very well. On that Christmas Eve in 86, I was standing in our Baker Street rooms, dressed in the costume of Santa Claus. Holmes, his long, thin fingers pressed together, lay back in an armchair and gazed at me quizzically, while our housekeeper, Mrs. Hudson, stood by the door and...
Well, Dr. Watson, you make a grand Santa Claus.
Doesn't he, Mrs. Hudson? Try the beard on, Watson, old chap.
I'm afraid this is going to be a little uncomfortable. How does it look?
Oh, you look just like the old man on the Christmas cards, Doctor.
Yes, Watson, it really becomes you. The cheery twinkle of the eyes, the ruddier complexion, and the appropriate girth. What a shame we cannot obtain some snow and sleigh and reindeer for you. However, I'm sure Mrs. Hudson's nieces will be very much impressed.
Aye, that they will, sir. And it's very kind of you, Doctor, to offer to come over to the house with me. With their father in the hospital and my sister at his bedside, it would have been a very miserable Christmas without ye.
Oh, I shall enjoy myself, but I think I'll take this beard off before we get there. Ah, that's it. Are you ready to leave, Mrs. Hudson?
I am, sir. Will I get a cab?
How far do we have to go?
Oh, Lexington Gardens, number 28. It's just off the Edgware Road, Doctor.
Oh, it's not far, but bearing in mind my costume, I suppose we better take a cab.
Aye, sir. I'll get one.
What are you going to do with yourself, Holmes? I hate leaving you alone on Christmas Eve.
Oh, don't worry, old chap. I shall spend a profitable evening writing on my new monograph.
Oh, what's this one about?
An analysis of teeth marks on pipe stems with particular regard to indicated character.
Oh, gracious me, how exciting. Well, I must be going.
Oh, don't forget your sack of presents, old fellow.
Oh, great Scott, no, no, no.
Ah, and when you come to distribute them, you'll find I took the liberty of adding a few trinkets on my own behalf.
Well, that's very thoughtful of you, Holmes.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Holmes, but there's a gentleman to see you. He says he's an old friend of yours. Here's his card, sir.
Oh, thank you. Oh, it's old Whittacombe. Splendid. Ask him to come up, please, Mrs. Hudson.
All right, sir.
And I hope your party is a great success, Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, thank you, sir. Are you sure you don't want me to stay, now that you have a visitor, I mean?
Oh, no. No, no, no. Indeed, no, Mrs. Hudson. I can show the gentleman out myself. You go off and have a good time.
Thank you, sir.
I wonder what Lord William wants. Perhaps I should stay and...
No, no, please, my dear fellow, certainly not.
Eh?
You've far more important work to do. Whittacombe probably wants his revenge at chess or something equally innocuous. Off with you, my dear fellow, and enjoy yourself.
Oh, very good. Just the same, I wish you were coming with me. I'll see you later.
I shall be there. Come up, Whittacombe.
Hello, Holmes. Oh, evening, Watson. You make a very convincing Santa Claus. Are you leaving?
I'm afraid so, Lord Whittacombe.
Well, good night, then.
Good night. Good night, sir.
How are you, Holmes? All alone on Christmas Eve, eh?
Yes, Whittacombe. I'm glad you've come over to see me.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it to be? An evening of chess, or have you unearthed some recent treasure of medieval pottery that we can discuss?
Neither, Holmes. I've come to you in your professional capacity. I need help.
Oh, come now, Whittacombe. Don't tell me that after all these years of quiet friendship, you're going to become a client.
Yes, I'm afraid so, Holmes, though I doubt if my problem will interest you very much. It's hardly up to your rather colorful standards. Care for a cigar?
Oh, thank you. Now, my dear Whittacombe, what's your troubles?
Well, I decided this year to have a little Christmas party at my townhouse. I'm quite comfortably off, as you know, and it occurred to me that I have several friends and relatives who are not as well off. I'm having a party for them tonight, Holmes, and I hope you'd attend it, disguised as Santa Claus.
Oh, my dear fellow. I've adopted many disguises in my time, but Father Christmas has never been one of them. Why do you want me to attend your party in disguise in any case? Are you ashamed of your friendship with a private detective? Or do you consider my features more acceptable when buried beneath the depths of a snowy beard?
Now, my dear Holmes, do take me seriously. I'm not joking, I assure you.
Oh, of course you're not. Of course you're not. You want me to attend your party in disguise. Why?
I'm giving some very valuable presents. Diamond and onyx cufflinks, platinum and ruby earrings and such like, and I've wrapped each of the presents in banknotes.
Oh, dear me. And where are these presents now?
In a sack, in charge of my butler. I was going to dress up as Santa Claus and give them out myself, until I got the warning letter. That's why I've come to you.
Warning letter, eh?
Yes, I received it by this evening's post. Listen to this. My dear Lord Whittacombe, your generosity with Christmas presents borders on ostentation. We do not approve. Either we receive £5,000 in sovereigns at Post Restant Box 379 by 6 o'clock on Christmas Eve, or I'm afraid your Christmas party will be conspicuous by its absence of presents.
Let me see that note, Whittacombe, will you?
Yes, here you are.
Thank you. Plain paper, torn from a penny notebook. Writing is obviously disguised, and it... By George, yes! Whittacombe, I accept the case. I'll come with you to your party at once, and furthermore, I shall follow your suggestion regarding a disguise. Dressed as Santa Claus, I shall be less likely to attract suspicion.
I'm delighted, Holmes. But what made you decide so suddenly?
This writing, my dear fellow, this writing. Though it's in a false hand, I'd know that characteristic M in my dear Whittacombe. I've seen it too often at the beginning of a signature. Moriarty.
Moriarty? Who's he?
Oh, one of the cleverest and most unscrupulous criminals in England. Whittacombe, there's no time to be lost. It's, let me see now, 6:30. Half an hour beyond the deadline given to you in this letter. We must go to your house at once.
This is as far as the cab can take us, Doctor.
Here you are, cabby. Here's 5 shillings for you and a Merry Christmas.
Oh, bless you, Governor, and a Merry Christmas to you, too.
You said you wanted to get into the back of the house through the back way so you could surprise the children.
Yes, I thought I'd pretend to come down the kitchen chimney.
Oh, you can get into the back of the house down the alleyway here. I'll go in the front door.
Splendid, splendid, Mrs. Hudson. Which is the house?
Number 28. It's the third one down the alley, Doctor. I'll have the back window open in no time, and you can slip in without any of the barons seeing you.
Very well. Gloomy little street, I must say. Hello, where's this music coming from?
Oh, it's from the temple across the street, Doctor. The Disciples of the Octagonal Square, they call themselves.
What on earth do you suppose that means?
Some newfangled cult. Heathens, most likely.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm not the only Santa Claus out tonight. Look at that fellow across the street over there.
Oh, dressed like yourself, Doctor, and carrying sack, too. Oh, he's running up the steps to the temple.
Great Scott! He slipped on the ice! I wonder what his hurry was. Here, here, my man. Let me help you up, sir.
Oh, be careful now, Doctor. Don't trip yourself.
Here you are, sir. Now give me your hand.
Thank you, sir. Silly of me, wasn't it?
Oh, we Santa Clauses have to help each other, you know. Up you come, that's it.
Whoa!
Oh, gracious me!
Oh, Doctor! I told you to be careful. Now you've fallen too.
Oh, it's this confounded red coat of mine. It tripped me up.
Did you hurt yourself, sir?
No. No, no, I'm all right, I think. How about you, sir?
Oh, I'm all right, thanks. Silly of me to run, wasn't it?
Here's your sack, sir.
Thank you. Good night, and Merry Christmas.
Good night. Same to you, sir, same to you. Oh, he went into the temple. He must be a disciple of the octagonal square.
Are you sure you're no hurt, Doctor?
No, no, of course not, Mrs. Hudson. Give me my sack, please. Thank you. Your sister's house is the third one down the alleyway, you say?
I'll hurry and open the back window.
Yes, I'll be waiting for you, Mrs. Hudson. This is going to be rather fun. What a shame Holmes isn't with us. Oh, well, he's probably happier having a good game of chess with Lord Whittacombe.
This is my house, Holmes, number 39.
39 Bronson Square, eh? And dear old Watson, just around the corner in Lexington Gardens, hasn't any idea that I've even left Baker Street.
Yes. Here you are, cabbie.
Oh, thank you, sire. And a Merry Christmas, sire.
Listen to that. Carol singers.
Yes, we'll probably have our fill of them before this evening's over.
Good evening, my lord.
Have the guests arrived, Hargrave?
Most of them, sir. They're in the library. You brought another Santa Claus with you, I see, my lord.
Another Santa Claus? What do you mean?
The gentleman arrived 3/4 hour ago, sir, dressed as Santa Claus. I took him to your study, my lord, and showed him the sack of presents.
Confound it! He's got here before us. Where is the study?
This way.
I hope I didn't do wrong, my lord. You told me that a gentleman dressed as Santa Claus would be coming here. Dear me, the gentleman appears to have gone.
Yes, and the sack containing the presents with him.
But he can't have left the house, my lord. I've been watching the front door.
Yes, and while you were doing that, he slipped out through the window here. The catch is undone. Hargrave, describe this man.
I can't tell you much about his appearance, I'm afraid, sir. He was dressed as Santa Claus, just like yourself. But I did notice one thing about him, sir.
Oh, and what was that?
He lisped, sir. It was quite pronounced.
Of course. Lou the Lisper.
Who on earth is Lou the Lisper?
One of Moriarty's most trusted accomplices. Fortunately, though, I've had news of him lately through my underworld grapevine.
You know where he lives?
He's reputed to have some connections with a new cult that calls themselves the Disciples of the Octagonal Square. Their headquarters are just around the corner from here.
Then let's go there at once.
Of course. And Hargrave?
Yes, sir.
Get a message to Scotland Yard as fast as you can. Ask for Inspector Lestrade, and tell him to join me at the Temple of the Octagonal Square in Lexington Gardens as soon as possible.
Oh, the children are awful excited, Doctor. I told them you just came down the chimney.
I'll slip on the beard and then I'll go into them. Ah, there we are.
Will I announce you, Doctor?
Yes, please, Mrs. Hudson.
All right, sir.
Santa,
quiet now, children, quiet. Santa Claus has come to see, and he's brought you all presents.
Santa.
Hello, hello, children.
Hello, Santa Claus. My name's Elsie. Did you bring me a present?
I did, Elsie. I'll look in my sack in a minute, and, what's your name, young man?
Herbert, but they call me Bertie. Did you come down the chimney?
Yes, Bertie.
I bet you had a time doing it. Yourself that.
Don't be rude, Bertie, or Santa Claus won't give you your presents.
And what's your name, little man?
Lytle. I have a cold.
Oh.
Yes, I see you have. Well, children, gather round and I'll see what presents I've got for you.
Oh, no, Bertie, that's me.
The first present is for... Well, this can't be right. It says for Her Grace, the Dowager Duchess of Dooley.
Do you suppose Mr. Holmes has been playing a practical joke on you, Doctor?
Well, I suppose so, but I can't see the point myself. But he did say that he'd added a few trinkets of his own.
I want my present.
Then supposing you take this one, Elsie.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
And this one is for the Reverend Arthur Carter. Wonder what Holmes is up to. Here you are, Bertie.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
And this one is for you, Lionel, because you've been a good little boy.
Tisn't very big, is it? I wanted a dog.
Oh, wanted a dog, good gracious me. Well, I'll bring you a dog next year, Lionel.
Dr. Watson?
Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
Look at the wrapping on these presents, Doctor. Why, they're 20-pound notes.
Great Scott!
Oh, cool. Look what I got.
Now, let me see. Why, cufflinks and diamond and onyx ones, unless I'm very much mistaken.
Oh, I got some pretty earrings. Look how they sparkle.
Let me see those. Good gracious. I swear these are platinum and rubies. What in thunder's going on?
I want my earrings back.
Give me back mine, too.
Well, here you are, here you are.
Dr. Watson, what do you suppose has happened?
I don't know, Mrs. Hudson. Perhaps my toys are still at the bottom of my sack. I can't understand it. I wish Holmes were here instead of dozing in front of our fire in Baker Street.
Where are you, Holmes?
Here, by the bed. This is the only room in the Temple that gives any signs of having been lived in. I think our bird has been here, but I'm afraid he's flown. I wish Inspector Lestrade would get here. Strike a match, will you, Whittaker?
Right. Ah, here's a candle on the table.
Ah, just as I feared. Look on the bed.
A red coat and a beard.
Yes. You, the Lisper, had discarded his disguise and gone. And with him, I'm afraid your valuable presence.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's a sack lying on the floor. Oh, no, this isn't mine. Look what's in it. A large box of chocolates, a toy dog, little girl's doll.
What in thunder? Why, this is Watson's sack.
But how on earth could Lou the Lisper have gotten hold of it?
Somewhere, somehow, he and Watson must have made an accidental change, and Lou the Lisper is no doubt trying to track Watson down at this very moment. We must work fast, Whittaker, or my friend's life and those of Mrs. Hudson's and her relatives won't be worth a tinker's damn.
Aw, now, Doctor, you can't break off your story there.
Oh, yes, I can, my boy. Before we go on, I thought we'd have a glass of port just to freshen us up.
Oh, well, that's something different. Port. Instead of talking about port, as I sometimes do, it'll be nice to drink some for a change.
There you are, my boy, and a Merry Christmas to you.
The same to you. And now, what happened next, Doctor? We left you at the children's Christmas party, and Sherlock Holmes and Lord Whittaker around the corner at the Temple of the Octagonal Square.
Yes, Mr. Bartell. Although at the time I had no idea what was going on, there I was, cheerfully handing out presents worth, well, not a king's, at least a baronet's ransom. Well, outside the Temple of the Octagonal Square, Holmes and Lord Whittaker were talking to Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard.
And that's the case in a nutshell, Lestrade.
Yes. Seems to me, Lord Whittaker, you'd have been wiser to get in touch with Scotland Yard when you first got the warning note. We could have nabbed him when he came to your house and pinched the sack of presents.
Lestrade, this is no time for postmortems. We've got to reach Lou the Lisper before he finds Dr. Watson.
Do you suppose he can do that, Holmes?
Well, it wouldn't be difficult. Lou the Lisper is nearly as clever as his master, Professor Moriarty. The chances are that you were followed when you came to Baker Street tonight, Whittaker. And it's equally likely that Watson and Mrs. Hudson were followed as they left it. Moriarty seldom leaves anything to chance.
Well, where did Dr. Watson go tonight?
To 28 Lexington Gardens. It's just around the corner from here.
Well, then let's go there at once.
And frighten our quarry away? No, 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 Lestrade. We must use a little subtlety. Now, Lou the Lisper wishes to recover the sack of presents from Watson. How would he invade the party with the least possible trouble?
By dressing up as Santa Claus again?
No. No, I'm afraid he's overplayed that role for one evening.
Well, then how would he try to get in, Mr. Holmes?
Oh, come now, Lestrade. What group of people can enter any house on Christmas Eve without invitation or creating suspicion?
The carol singers.
Exactly, my dear fellow. I shouldn't be at all surprised if at this very moment Lou the Lisper and some of his gang are singing carols outside 28 Lexington Gardens.
Well, then what are we going to do?
Form a rival choral society. How many of your men did you bring with you?
Three. A sergeant and two constables.
Wearing greatcoats?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. But why?
Good. They can hide their helmets and pretend to be singers. Come on, let's go over there, and while we're walking, we'll rehearse our carols. We must appear reasonably convincing. Sound your A's, Lestrade. Sound your A.
Santa Claus.
No, you mustn't make Santa Claus too tired, Lionel.
No, that's all right, Mrs. Hudson. Hop on, Lionel, hop on.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of
Steve. Oh, they're singing carols outside the door.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Oh, can they come inside and sing for us, Santa Claus?
Yes, of course they can. Ask them to come in, Mrs. Hudson, will you?
All right, sir. Oh, come on, let me get on your back, too.
Oh, now, take it easy. Oh, there we go.
I want to see your reindeer, Santa.
See my reindeer? Well, they're up on the roof.
Oh, well, I'll climb up and see them.
No. You mustn't do that. They're asleep. Oh, here are the carol singers. Get off you get, children. Oh, there we go. That's it. Now, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, and Merry Christmas.
Would you like to sing some carols for the children? After that, I'm sure you'd like a little drop of something to warm you up.
Well, thank you, sir. We'd sure like that.
Haven't I met you somewhere before, my man?
No, sir. I'm sure you haven't. Come on, men. Let's sing Good King Wenceslas.
King Wenceslas was out on the feast of Stephen.
Well, here we are outside the house, Mr. Holmes. Now what?
Shh. Listen to that. Aha! Knew the Lisper has already been there.
Are we going in now?
In a moment. Now, men, do you have your truncheons handy?
Aye, Mr. Holmes. We're ready.
Splendid. Now remember, when we're inside and I yell, Merry Christmas, at the top of my voice, you bring out your truncheons and get Lou the Lisper and his gang out of there as quickly as possible. Don't arrest them until you've got them outside again, Lestrade. I don't want to frighten the children.
Right you are, Mr. Holmes. We're ready. Just give us the word and we'll go in and get them.
Ah, that was very nice singing. And now how about something to warm y'all up?
That won't be necessary, Dr. Watson. See to the door, Sammy. Now all of you stay right where you are.
Who are you? What do you think you're up to?
Please don't be difficult, Doctor. All I want is the jewels out of my sack that you stole from me tonight. You try and stop me, I shall have to hurt you.
Why do you talk so funny? You got a cold like me.
Shut up. Now, Doctor, where are the jewels? Curses. There's some more carol singers outside.
Shall I tell them to go away, Lou?
No, better let them come in. If we don't, they might get suspicious.
All right, Lou. I suppose you know what you're up to.
Now, no tricks, Doctor. If you try and give an alarm, I shall have to get rough with you.
Well, I don't mind about that, but just remember, there are children present.
How are ye, matey? Oh, you were here before us, eh? Well, what do you say we all join in a little carol for the nippers, eh?
Well, all right. What do you want to sing?
Oh, how about Hark There, Old Angel Sing, eh?
All right. Come on, men, let's sing.
Hark There, Old Angel Sing, glory to a newborn king.
Merry Christmas!
Explain it to you later, old chap. Lestrade.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Take them to Scotland Yard and prefer charges. I'll be over in a little while and give evidence.
Right you are, sir. Too bad we didn't catch Professor Moriarty, too.
Well, at least we have some of his cohorts. I will see you later, Lestrade.
I wish I knew what was going on here. Is Moriarty mixed up in this business?
Yes, Watson, and I'll tell you about it as soon as I've straightened this thing out. Oh, Whittaker.
Yes, Holmes?
The 20-pound note that you used as wrapping for your gifts seem to have been scattered all over the house. Do you want me to recover them too?
No. From what you've told me of the children, I think their parents could use the money much more profitably than my relatives. In any case, I can replace it.
A very generous Christmas gift. Well, children, did you enjoy the little game we staged for you?
It was a lot of fun.
I nearly died when they started hitting each other.
And I'm glad you enjoyed it, children. And now I want you to show me the presents you received.
I got these pretty earrings.
Oh, well, they were a part of the game, too. A nice little girl like you doesn't want silly earrings, Elsie. Here's a beautiful doll for you.
Cool. Her eyes open and shut and everything.
And what did you get, my little man?
These.
Oh, cufflinks. Good gracious. Who wants cufflinks when he can have a clockwork train? Would you like to exchange?
A train? Lord love a duck, yes.
I bounted a dog.
There's one for you, Lionel. A nice woolly dog.
Oh, cool. He's lovely.
And here you are, children. Here's a nice big box of chocolates, too. You can all share them.
Oh, love me, what a night. I had as much fun since Granny got her finger stuck in the plug hole.
I still don't understand what's going on, Holmes, but I must say, this has all the earmarks of being a happy Christmas.
Yes, old fella. Mrs. Hudson?
Hi, Mr. Holmes.
How's the turkey coming along?
Oh, it'll be ready in a few minutes, Mr. Holmes.
Splendid. And while we're waiting, perhaps the children will oblige with something we haven't heard so far this evening.
Yes. Yes, I know what you mean. A Christmas carol that really sounds convincing. Now, how about it, children?
All right, sir. Come on, Elsie. Come on, Lionel.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yon virgin mother and child,
Doctor, that was really a swell story. On a Christmas Eve like this, do you ever wish you were back in Baker Street celebrating Christmas there?
At times, yes. But actually, Mr. Bartell, I'm very happy right here in my little home. There on the table is a beautiful Christmas tree. There's a fine fire in my fireplace. My dogs, Monty and Willie, are sleeping peacefully at my feet. And best of it all, I've got the love of every child in the neighborhood. Yes, I've got a great deal this Christmas Eve. Lots to be thankful for. And what with the troubles of their world on their way to being settled, it looks like if this is the brightest Christmas that I've ever had.
Well, that's how I feel about it too, Doctor.
I hope that all our friends listening are just as happy this Christmas Eve as we are. And speaking not only for myself, but I know for all of us, and for the Petrie family, too, we wish all of you a happy Christmas. From the bottom of our hearts, God rest ye merry. Gentlemen?
Well, Dr. Watson, next Monday is New Year's Eve. What story do you plan to tell us?
One I think you'll find extremely appropriate, Mr. Bartell. It takes place in a Scottish castle near Edinburgh on New Year's Eve in 1900, and concerns a pair of lovers, an elderly baronet, and a strange iron box worth more than its weight in gold.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of the Blue Carbuncle. Music is by Dean Fosler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petrie Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week. Same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petrie family. For a solid hour of exciting mystery dramas, listen every Monday on most of these same stations at 8 o'clock to Michael Shane, followed immediately by Sherlock Holmes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System. Sherlock Holmes, The Night Before Christmas, starring Seton Bryan as Harry Bartell, the announcer, Athena Hughes as Lou the Lisper and Elsie, Emeterio Hernandez as Sherlock Holmes, Calvin Drake as Dr. John Watson, Janet Drake as Mrs. Hudson, Luciano Canizzaro as Lord Widdicombe, Bethany Boyer-Recklin as the first cabbie, Hargrave and Lionel, Jack Peterson as the second cabbie, Bertie and Copper, Zeke Blackwell as Inspector Lestrade and Sammy. Music by Celia Lubin and directed by Susan Bronlin. This production was directed by Susan Bronlin and Megan Pasternak and produced by Shannon Hoagland. Technical direction by Jay Bradley and Monica Agnew. Sound effects by Gene Stolberg, Mary Beth Payloff, and Karen Upcraft. Sound by John Hirschenreiter. Visual effects by Phil Horton and Jay Bradley. Stage management by Tom Hess. And a big thank you to Ed Ronco for his help and support in preparation for this show. This production was sponsored by the Sitka Fine Arts Camp, Alaskan Dream Cruises, and the Greater Sitka Arts Council.
You have been listening to the 2014 radio theater production by Sitka Community Theater. This radio broadcast was produced for Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka, by Emily Kwong, with help from Shannon Hoagland and Seton Bryan.